Hello. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our third quarter 2022 earnings conference call. Obviously, you are on the MásMóvil conference call, as it couldn't be otherwise. We have with us, also as our recurrent speaker, Meinrad Spenger, our CEO, and we have also David Pérez Renovales, our CFO. Please remember that we have changed the conference call mechanisms, and if you wanna ask a question, you will have to press star five on your keyboard. Without further delay, Meini, all yours.
Thank you, Javier. Good morning, everybody. I apologize for my voice. It's because I've been a bit sick. It's not because of shouting with my team. We are still in good mood because we are continue to grow. The highlights of our results in Q3, we see it on the first page of our presentation. Basically, we did in regards to the potential JV with Orange, we did the pre-filing at the end of September, and we are now in the ordinary process of interacting with the European Commission, the case team, and responding to the requests for information. In terms of Portugal, we delivered on our promise. Basically, we have taken a strategic decision to exit the Portuguese market, and in that sense, we have signed an agreement with Vodafone to sell our Novo assets to Vodafone Portugal. Closing is expected during H1 2023. It's subject to regulatory approval, and we are optimistic that this approval will be achieved. If you look at our performance, as mentioned, we continue to grow in the first 9 months. We have a year-on-year revenue growth, service revenue growth of 4%. It's a reported growth of 28% if we, let's say, include the increase with Euskaltel, if we don't do a pro forma comparison. EBITDA has also grown significantly. The underlying growth is 13%, and we reach 842 million with a margin expansion also of 2 percentage points to 39%. In terms of lines of clients, we also continue our growth to more than 3.2 million broadband lines, mostly fiber, and around 15 million total services, including mobile and broadband. It's interesting that we continue to grow in all our major product segments. In terms of net debt, we have been able to reduce slightly the absolute amount of net debt, and the leverage keeps more or less stable in comparison to last quarter. If you go next page, on page two, we have the details. As mentioned, we have a reported revenue growth of 28% in service revenues, total 27%. If you look at service revenues, sorry, pro forma revenue growth, we have a 4% growth. Means that includes also the numbers of Euskaltel, which we incorporated in August 2021. In terms of profitability in EBITDA on next page, we see the evolution from 540 million euros in H1 to 842 million euros after 9 months. That has an underlying EBITDA growth of 13%. Underlying means basically we adjust for same accounting policies. We see also an EBITDA margin expansion to 39% from 37% in H1. In terms of evolution of lines on next page four, we see we are growing. We have been adding 53,000 broadband lines net in the last quarter and over 100,000 mobile postpaid net adds. Also we are growing in prepaid lines, which is especially significant because we have done migrations of both our Lebara and Lyca brands to our own prepaid platform. This was successful. We had some operational challenges, obviously, but still, we've done it and concluded it successfully. On the next page, page 5, we see basically the evolution of our net capex, around 400 million. We maintain the share of 12% on total reported revenues of our recurrent capex. And we have around 140 million in growth capex, commercially and infrastructure capex, because we are continuing to deploy, even so at a lower rate. If you look at the next page, on page 6, you see the reported cash flow from operations. Good news. Basically, we have a positive quarterly sequential improvement in the last three quarters, from negative 118 million Q1 to basically flat in Q2, to 75 million positive in Q3. Why is this? Because, I mean, we are increasing EBITDA, we have relatively stable capex, and also relatively stable interest payments. Therefore, let's say, overall positive evolution. If you look at the cost categories, I mean, I think you are familiar with them. Deferred capex is basically, we have paid 75 million to Orange for the Pomelo FTTH agreements. So this is the long tail of the payments for the IOUs. We have in the networks and capital adjustments, we are better than last year, because last year we had around 216 million euros, and we have over 100 million is working capital adjustment linked to customer growth, IFRS 3. So positive evolution there, and this has also impact, obviously, on page 7 on the net debt. We see a reduction of close to 50 million in net debt versus the second quarter, and we are having a total net debt of around 6.4 billion. In the cash one-offs, the big part is penalty payments that we agreed in regards to the reorganization of our wholesale agreements after the acquisition of Euskaltel. And on page 8, we see details on our leverage. We see the nominal view on the leverage, and we see a leverage of 5.2 total debt and 4.3 times EBITDA on the senior secured debt. So I think in overall we are in a line with our expectations, with our plan, and are happy to respond to your questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mini. So we open now the Q&A part of the conference call. Remember that to place your question on the queue, you should press star 5 on the telephone keypad. We do have a first question. It's coming from Josh Mill from BNP Paribas. Josh, your line, I think, is going to be open in 3 seconds. Go ahead, Josh.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me? Is this back?
Yes. We hear you, Josh.
Great. Please. Okay, great. Thanks very much. So a couple of questions from my side. The first is on the service revenue growth. So, you know, it looks like growth picked up a bit this quarter, despite the fact that net adds have slowed down a bit, as we might have expected. Can you just give us a sense of how ARPUs are developing, both in fixed and mobile, and any commentary around, you know, how you view the competitive environment there to fold that in would be helpful. And then secondly, you touched on it, and I think you've referenced it in the documents today, but it's quite difficult for us to see all the moving parts behind the EBITDA growth, which is swinging around a lot quarter by quarter. So could you just maybe talk us through the headwinds you saw this last quarter and what we should expect for Q4, if possible? Thanks very much.
Yes, Josh, thank you very much. Regarding service revenues, no, we have, organic or, let's say, a comparable growth of 4% pro forma, which is quite impressive if you compare it with the other top three operators in the Spanish market because all are negative in service revenue growth. So having said that, it's difficult times. It's a complex competitive environment. We have a lot of price-based competitors, mavericks, that are, influencing strongly the market and the pricing, and they're growing a lot. So here in Spain, we have the situation that probably the players that are most price aggressive and have a strong growth momentum are the ones with less infrastructure. And that's quite singular. And in MásMóvil, we are especially proud of our growth, not because we are the only one of the top four operators that is growing, but because we have some side hobbies to do. For instance, the integration efforts of Euskaltel. And we are happy to announce that we have been growing in the in all the Euskaltel territories, so meaning Basque Country, Asturias and Galicia, a number of clients since our acquisitions. So this is very good news. And we have also been growing despite of client migrations. I mentioned two of them, no? All the Lebara and Leica prepaid clients. We have been migrating to our platform, which was a special effort, and obviously with some operational challenges. And you might have some service, some reduced service in some lines, some clients may be affected, etc. So this is a delicate process which we mastered quite well. And so overall, we can be very satisfied with the results and the continuous growth of the company. In terms of ARPU, we try to basically be stable. As mentioned before, and we manage it more or less in both in mobile and fixed, but basically mobile only, it's more complex, and we probably see a slight reduction in ARPU also this year, mobile only, especially postpaid. In FMC, we are more or less stable, and this is not an easy task. No? We are in a market, as mentioned before, with a lot of players, with a lot of price-aggressive mavericks. Price levels are low already in Spain in comparison with other European markets. Spaniards are the most price-sensitive consumers in the telecom markets in Europe, and the prices are the most important reason to change operators in Spain. So overall, we are in a market where, price adjustments are challenging, and that's why we are working on efficiency especially. So we have installed, for instance, Javier, our investor relations director, as moderator in the conference call today. So efficiency is important, and that's why we are, for instance, working on the GV with Orange, because it creates important efficiencies. No? In terms of EBITDA, we have quite a, impressive growth story again. So we have been increasing by around 300 million per quarter the EBITDA, 13% underlying growth. And, you know, quarter by quarter, there are some seasonality effects, especially in our case, related, for instance, to NRA agreements. There are some different buckets that apply, and, you know, we could normalize the costs, but if we don't do it, we see some ups and downs. We have roaming in, especially important in the third quarter in the Spanish market, you know, tourists coming in. We have some infrastructure deployment margins where we deploy infrastructure for others punctually. So there are some seasonality effects that we have to consider, but going forward, we are quite comfortable with maintaining this 38-39% EBITDA margin. Did I respond to your questions?
Yeah, that's very clear. And I guess just for the full year and Q4, in the past, I think you talked about a 10% kind of target EBITDA growth for this year. Now, would that imply a level of slowdown in in Q4, partly related to some of that, some of those one-offs, or
no? I
10%?
Mean,
yeah.
Look, I mean, the underlying 13% is, like, let's say, to normalize, if you normalize the accounting, no, basically, and but to be fair, no, basically, because the Euskaltel did some difference in the SAC, also commercial acquisition cost accounting, and if you normalize it, we have a 13% EBITDA growth. If we don't do it, it's a bit smaller, and we will be close to the 10% probably. And 11%. So no, we don't foresee a relevant slowdown in Q4, to be clear.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. So thank you, Josh. Our next question is coming from Fernando Cordero from Santander, Banco Santander. Fernando, the line is open.
Hello. Good morning. Thanks for taking my three questions. The first one is as a follow-up on all the noise that we are hearing regarding price increases in the, not only noise, but also news flow on the Spanish market, just to understand how are you approaching 2023 in terms of price management, and also consistent with your comments mainly on how the market is performing right now. Second question is regarding the implementation of the new telecommunications law, particularly on the structure of the end user clients contracts. In that sense, one of the elements that are new in the new law is the obligation for the operators to communicate the best offer to the clients at least at the end of the 24 months contract. In that sense, I would like to understand if you are already having some views or some ideas on how this communication has to be done, and if you foresee any kind of long trading or upside trading, in whatever the case, to the value of the clients. And the last question is, we have seen also some comments recently on the potential investments, if the deal with Orange goes through, potential investments in expanding your current fiber footprint. I'm not going to ask for details for obvious reasons, given that we are in the middle of the process, but just to understand, considering your views on the market, how do you see currently the unitary deployment cost of fiber in small cities or small villages in rural areas compared with urban areas, just to understand what are going to be, what is the potential, let's say, the potential profitability of the remaining deployments in rural areas in Spain. Many thanks.
Okay, Fernando, thank you. First, the first point, I think, was related to pricing policies, no? I mean, I obviously cannot give you our concrete ideas regarding our commercial policy here in public, but we have to consider that what I mentioned before a bit, no? We are, Spain is a very crowded market, no? We have a lot of players that are basing their main competitive argument in low prices. So we have a lot of players which we would call mavericks, no? That try to grow with low margins and with low prices. And that means that in general, as you know, the telco sector has suffered in terms of revenue evolution a lot over the last 10 years, more than 30% revenues down. And also this year, the three, let's say, traditional operators in Spain have all reduced their service revenues. And then we have also a component of the Spanish consumer behavior, no? If we look at in September, JP Morgan published a survey on let's say, pricing and price sensitivity of the consumers in different European countries. And the Spaniards are quite satisfied with the pricing levels because it's low, but they are also the most sensitive to price changes. So, in addition, price is the most important argument to change operators in the Spanish market. So you can understand that this environment, if you want to adapt prices, it's quite challenging, and that's why we are working on efficiency in MásMóvil. Now, we have an inflationary environment. It's a significant inflationary environment. Last 2 years together, more or less 15% inflation impact. So nobody should ask, no company and not even the operators, the telco operators, to lose money. We have to be able to cover our costs. Thus, in consequence, also MassMobil will analyze closely the evolution of our cost base, and we will take decisions in the appropriate moment, and communicate it obviously also to our clients. But in any case, if we take a decision to change prices, it will be significantly less than the inflationary impact that I just mentioned. And the second question regarding the implementation of the new telecom law, I mean, we have been advancing, we have been informing the clients on the changes, obviously, correctly. The obligation of informing the client on alternative offers after 2 years, after the 24 months, I mean, we are still concreting this measure because it's not to be applied immediately, so we have time to do so. But obviously, we will be as fully transparent with our clients as always. No, but we have not implemented concretely this measure yet because it's not necessary. In terms of potential investments of the GV, if it happens, it's quite clear. One of the reasons to create this GV is basically to create a solid player that has capacity to invest. We would expect run rate synergies from year four onwards of around 450 million euros, and obviously we can use this capital to invest in infrastructure and extend current infrastructure. No, and basically, obviously the most logical areas are FTTH and 5G. In FTTH, it's true that the long tail, some very rural areas, are expensive to deploy, not so much because of the let's say fiber deployment in the villages, but because to get there and to have the transportation and let's say the backhaul prepared to transport the traffic out of these villages, no? But the GV between Orange and MassMobil has still capacity to grow at reasonable prices, so around 100 euros per building units, in additional areas that we would analyze if the GV happens.
Okay.
Did I respond to your question, Fernando?
Many thanks for the insights. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Fernando. The next question is coming from Luigi Minerva from HSBC. Luigi, your line is open now.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. Going back to the pricing environment in Spain, mainly, just like to touch a slightly different angle. I remember in the Q2 call, you made a comment that with the inflationary pressure, it was unsustainable to continue to see price aggression and price declines in the market. And I think, you know, you've been heard in a way because Vodafone is introducing an inflation link, Telefonica apparently doing something very similar. I just wanted to have your views if you think that this inflation link with prices can become a stable feature in the Spanish market, or whether it's just a temporary reaction given the pressure you feel, or you operators feel on costs. The second question is on the infrastructure growth that you keep doing. You know, in slide 5, you mentioned there is still some FTTH network deployment. I just wanted to just clarify exactly what is this. Is it the usual IRUs you are exchanging with Orange as part of your agreement, or is it actual built of in genuinely new areas for both you and Orange? And thirdly, perhaps an update on the process on the merger side. Are Are we still at the pre-filing phase, and what it takes to get to the deal formally filed, and whether you have a view on whether it will stay in Brussels or in Madrid with the relevant competition authority. Thank you.
Thank you, Luigi. Yes, I mean, obviously, I mean, I think it's not something very difficult to understand that if we are in a significant deflationary environment, that no market, neither the telco market nor other markets can do the contrary and continue a deflationary trend. No, I think that's quite obvious because all companies have to cover some costs, and we know that the return on capital in the Spanish market of most of the operators is low, even below WACC, so the cost of capital. So this obviously that this is not sustainable is quite clear, but the situation of each operator is different, and so each operator might react differently to this situation. No? What we know until now is that Vodafone in its main brand has introduced clauses to adjust for inflation, but we do not know if it actually will be applied. So this is just hypothesis driven right now. And Telefonica, it seems also to do some adjustments, but you know, we have to understand exactly what will be done, because in the past frequently Telefonica increased in the prices in the premium segment, where let's say the competition is lower currently because of content rights, etc., and not so much in the mid and in the low end. We will see what happens. In MásMóvil, we are committed to fair pricing to avoid big surprises. But we have to also consider this environment, the inflation, and we will have to cover our costs. Having said that, we will announce decisions when it's appropriate. And if this is punctual or stable, I don't know. I mean, obviously it makes a lot of sense to consider cost increases in the pricing. But we'll see if it becomes market standard as in other markets. I think the UK is quite already implemented, and some other markets will follow. I think it's too early to say for the Spanish market, especially because we have a lot of price-based competition, and the prices are especially important in the Spanish market, in the Spanish telco market. In terms of FTTH deployment, yeah, no, this is not only IRUs, this is also, let's say, additional own deployment. We have still some deployments ongoing. Probably 50% is in the north of Spain, in the former Euskaltel territory, and the rest in the rest of Spain. So we have still around 300 to 350,000 homes to be delivered to retrofit the former HFC footprint in the Euskaltel territory, so Galicia, Asturias, and Basque region, and the rest is in the, let's say, more or less the same amount is outside of this northern region. So this is on the way, and basically most of it should be finished within 2023. That would be our expectations. So that basically our investment, the major infrastructure investment of MásMóvil will come to the end by the end of 2023. Pre-filing has to be done by end of September, and now we are in the process of interacting with the European Commission, specifically the case team. They are sending us RFIs to detail the documentation that we sent, basically the 500 pages that we submitted, and it will be probably come 1,000 pages by the end of this process. So it's a, let's say, interactive process to clarify doubts, etc. I would suppose that within the next month, this process can be concluded, but it's not only depending on us. So we try to be quick in the responses, but it's a lot of work, and we have to we have two parties involved, Orange and MásMóvil, which makes this process a bit more complex. I suppose that before Christmas, this should basically be done, no? That we have the full documentation ready to file. But as mentioned, we are not depending only on us in this process. Luigi, any more comments, questions?
No, that's perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Luigi. Next question is coming from Philippe Lacat from Modo. Philippe, your line is open.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, fantastic.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks for taking my questions and congratulations on the results. I have just two questions. With respect to your EBITDA synergies from Euskaltel, how much synergies are still to be deployed for the end of the year? And secondly, to your working capital, we saw now a continuous outflow for the 9 months. Do you think that in the fourth quarter we will have less outflow, or do the working capital reverse? What is typical in your business? Thanks.
Yes, Philippe. Regarding the synergy, exact synergies, you are asking the incremental synergies in Q4 versus Q3? We will have to come back offline. The exact numbers I don't have in my mind. We have by the end of this year, we will have still around 80 million euros of synergies, waiting to be materialized next year onwards, especially related to the shutdown of the cable network and, you know, the full deployment of the fiber network. Also some synergies regarding system unification, etc. But the incremental synergies Q4 versus Q3, I don't know. It will not be very significant, but our investor relations team will come back to you. Working capital, Javier?
Yes, Philippe, on the working capital number that you see on slide 6 on the presentation that includes working capital and mainly IFRS 15 related issues, the excluding IFRS working capital is a 35 million negative, so cash outflow for the first 9 months, so it's not a very material figure, and that figure tends to go down as we approach the end of the year.
Okay, perfect, thank you.
Fantastic. So the next question is coming from Aidisa Ali from Barings. Aidisa, I think your line should be open by now.
Hi, good morning. This is Ramal Koppen for Aidisa. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we do.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Just one question for me. Can you please disclose what the organic revenue, can you please disclose what the organic revenue and EBITDA growth was in Q3?
Yes, of course. Javier, can you give the exact numbers?
Yeah. On revenues, let's focus on service revenues. We're talking about, obviously, on a Q3 standalone basis, low single digit, talking about around 3%. And on EBITDA, again, underlying EBITDA, it is slightly below 20%. As Manny said, and I think this is important to remember, we are coming from 5% in Q2 standalone and 15% in Q1, right? So it seems that obviously Q2 had a seasonal impact, as many mentioned, which are also are turning back into Q3. So the way we will see our full year performance is pretty much going from 15% in Q1 to an average of 12% in the average of Q2, Q3, which is a much more reasonable, not only basis for expecting the performance in Q4, but also reasonable trend for the quarters of the year.
Okay, thank you. So can I just clarify? So you have 15% for standalone growth in Q1, 5% in Q2, and Q3 has come in at around what?
Slightly less than 20%.
Slightly less than 20%, okay. And then so you're saying... Sorry.
Yeah, and therefore, obviously, 5% is not a real number, neither 19. I think if you take the average of the two, you are pretty much on the right path.
Okay, perfect. Thanks so much for the answer.
Okay, so please remember, if you want to put a question to our CEO, you should hit star 5 on your telephone keypad. You have a question from Matthew Robillard for Barclays. Matthew, the line is open.
Good morning. Thank you for the presentation. I had one question and one follow-up. I don't know if you've disclosed what is the impact of the higher energy prices that we've seen. If you haven't, could you give a little bit of detail in terms of 2022 and how is your hedging for 2023? And then I had a follow-up question from one of your previous answers, just to make sure I understand correctly, in terms of the investments you were doing still. So I got that you still needed to upgrade 300,000 to 350,000 homes in the cable areas, and that you have a similar amount to invest in other regions. So I get to a total of 600,000 to 700,000, but I'm not entirely sure I got it right. Thanks.
Yes. Well, the energy impact in MasMovil is a low double-digit number, so probably around 1.5% of the EBITDA this year. Low double digit.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. Above 10 million euros.
Mm-hmm.
So around 1.5% of EBITDA this year in 2022. We think there will be some increase also in 2023, we expect, but it will not be significant because the biggest part of the energy we are hedged for next year. But yes, we see some impact, some relevant impact this year. In terms of deployment, yes, you're right. We are talking about 600 to 700,000 homes.
Great. Thank you very much.
Great. Our next question is coming from Karan Dorka from ICG. Karan, your line is open now.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the presentation. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. I just wanted to ask if the sale proceeds have come through from the FTTH network that you sold to Euclid earlier in September, and also what the plan is for the use of those proceeds.
Yes. Yes, thank you for your question. Yes, most of it comes from the sale of two networks. In fact, the first of them has been the Euclid Netco that has been executed partially in September, and then there is still some other part of the deal to be executed prospectively in the last quarter of the year. And besides the sale that we made in the second quarter of the Bidasoa, so the network in the northern regions of Spain. And yes, the bulk of the proceeds have been devoted to the amortization of debt. That's the debt reduction comes basically from the proceeds of the network sales.
But there's still amounts pending to come in because let's say Ucles deployment, the deal that we did with Onivia, not all of the network is already deployed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so of the 200 million, how much is left to be received?
Sorry, of the 200 million.
Yeah.
Of the 200 million, mostly, I would say that 60% of the deal has already accounted in the third quarter, and then the rest is going to be will be coming in the last quarter of the year, mostly.
Yeah, there will be a long tail also next year. But
yeah, exactly.
The major part we will expect for this year, but let's say 15% should be opened to come in 2023.
Okay, thank you. And I just have one more question, if you don't mind. So there was obviously still some discussion in the press about the take private deal price. Now, is that just rumors and sort of, you know, unfounded sort of press, and that there's not really much going to change, or how are you looking about that? It's going back to 2019, obviously.
Let's say we are not really involved in these discussions, and I think this is and we have not been contacted by the regulator regarding this process lately, so we don't expect any relevant news regarding this topic.
Okay, thanks for taking my questions.
Great, thank you very much, Karen. Just a reminder, if you want to put a question to us, please *5 on your telephone keypad. We do have a question now from come back from Josh Mill. Josh, your line is open now.
Thanks, guys. It was a short one. I just wondered if you could give, in the same way you have just done for EBITDA, the underlying service revenue growth for the past three quarters. I'm just trying to work this out from the presentations, but I think that might be affected by pro formas. I want to make sure that I get it right. So could you just talk us through what the organic service revenue growth was in Q1, Q2, and then Q3, please? Thanks.
Yes, obviously with the inclusion of Euskaltel, reported service revenue growth is a huge number, obviously, you know, on higher than double digit for all means. So that's why we focus on the pro forma numbers. Remember, on EBITDA, we differentiate underlying, given that we do the accounting adjustments that mentioned by many on the SAC acquisition of Euskaltel. So therefore, on a service revenue quarterly standalone basis, we are coming from a 6% in Q1 to low single digit Q2 and Q3.
And just maybe Q3 versus Q2, looks to me like it might have been slightly lower in Q3 than Q2. Is that fair?
No. I think, you know, obviously let's not focus on decimal points, but the Q3 and the Q2 numbers are pretty much in line.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. We do have another question, and the question is coming from Mark Watts. Mark, your line is now open.
Hi, guys.
Sorry, Mark, I forgot to mention that you're coming from Citi.
Thank you. Thanks for taking the call. And apologies if you already covered this already because I had to dial in late. Just around energy inflation, or less so just energy inflation, but costs in general, you know, you've hinted that energy isn't maybe a large portion of costs. Just trying to understand the largest component of OPEX, you know, how much are you expecting to increase in terms of, say, labor? Is that a bigger issue for you going into the end of this year, next year? And then the second question I had was just around your fixed to floating exposure. Could you just briefly outline how much of your debt is currently floating? And is there a sort of a reasonable amount you expect there? Are you comfortable with the kind of the percentage split? Thank you.
Yes, I mean, look, we are, MasMobile is a company with around 130 million euros of labor expenses. And obviously, we did no explicit inflation adjustment this year, but we will have to do it in the next year. No, we have partially also agreed on the salary adjustments for part of the North former Euskaltel territory, with an agreement there. It will be around 3.5%, increase, and we are right now in the negotiation process for the coming year. But you know, considering the 100 that we are quite a lean company, 130 million euros, we don't expect this to materially change the picture that we are drawing today. No? But it would be a relevant cost bucket that we have to consider, because we cannot expect our employees, our team members, to continue as if no inflation would happen, no? Obviously. So we are a social, we are a company with, we try to create a positive social impact and have a positive environment and our team motivated. So we will have to adjust salaries, yes.
And yes, and regarding the hedging of the debt, we have close to 70% of the outstanding debt already at fixed interest rates. And not, it comprises what is originally issued at fixed interest rates, and also what we have already hedged, you know, in the stock market, right? Besides that, we are managing the short-term debt indebtedness. For example, we have issued commercial paper at longer terms in order to have fixed interest rates in the last months for a longer period of time. So at the end of the day, we have made an active management of the interest rates costs, considering the volatility of the market environment. I think that the swap cure have over-discounted some rise in interest rates. So at the end of the day, what we are making is to closely monitor the market for tracking of the interest rates. We have to do some more hedging. But at the end of the day, we do feel comfortable with the present situation with our indebtedness.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mark. There are no further questions on the queue. So unless something pops up in the next seconds, I think we will close the conference now. And I leave Manny to do the final remarks. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us again. We wish you a nice end of the year. Merry Christmas, and we hope you to hear you with the results of Q4 again in early next year, and hopefully also with a positive update on the process, antitrust process regarding the JV with Orange. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.